Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, I should have whipped together a promo for you. Usually Friday after the show, I'll put together a promo. Hey, here's what we got in the week ahead. Or if we have something scheduled for a Monday, I'll say, hey, here's what we got coming up on Monday. And, you know, I was in Glendive, and then we had the hot beef sandwiches ready to roll in Glendive. So, I, you know, priorities, right? So I never cut a promo after Friday's show. And so thankfully, you're in for a great guest, whether you knew about it or not. Marco Manoukian is in the house with us here. He is the co-chair of the St. Mary's Rehabilitation Working Group, former MSU Extension agent, served 29 years. Of course, I first got to know him when he was the MSU Extension agent for Phillips County. He's a rancher and the secretary treasurer for the Phillips County Livestock Association. Marco, great to see you.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate it and appreciate being here and visiting with your listeners.
The bull sale must go on. You're in town for a bull sale, and man, I think I forget how much snow we got, but that didn't stop you. It didn't stop the bull sale, huh?
No, but we're lack of snow, so I brought a trailer. We're going to try to haul some home.
Just shovel all the snow in the back of your trailer.
Yeah, maybe I can get everybody at BLS to help pitch in and we'll get that done.
There you go. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. It's like all this snow that the Billings area is getting in particular. I'll have to go back and look on X again to see how much they were reporting, but it's been crazy. In fact, the snow that's piled up in my front yard now, not to rub it into our friends in Phillips County, is higher than my pickup door. And I've got the off-road edition, so I'm not driving.
Sure.
I'm not driving a lowrider, you know.
It's not a Prius.
Yeah, it's not a Prius, and I'm not driving a lowrider with wire wheel pickup like I'm in Colorado, like I'm in Aurora, Colorado or something, right? I'm driving a off-road lifted pickup, nothing too crazy. And it's higher, like it's almost up to where my window would roll down.
You know? Yeah, I envy the position. Wish we had that opportunity.
Now, meanwhile, I see my cousins who ranch out, you know, in Fallon, Terry, and, you know, Ismi country, and they're like, we are not getting anywhere near that kind of moisture. And same thing, it sounds like, up on the High Line where you're at.
Yeah. Share with your listeners the vision of a map. So this comes off a snow precipitation map for the winter months starting in October. And, you know, the eastern part of Montana, as you described, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, a little bit of Michigan, Iowa, all have a snow deficit. And some of those numbers, as you get towards the east, are in the, you know, negative 20-inch in snow deficit area. And it's just kind of a cruel joke by Mother Nature. We really needed an above-water winter to kind of stymie the lack of water in the Milk River. And we just haven't reached that at all.
Well, and I know it's like 30, maybe 40 below zero with some of the wind chills this morning. But then they're saying it's going to be like 50 degrees by the end of the week already.
There's hope in sight from that weather.
The kids will be wearing shorts and T-shirts and flip-flops with socks in Malta in just a few days, it sounds like.
Yep.
All right, well, we're going to talk about a very important issue, the lifeline of the High Line. We're going to talk about that right after this.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can talk about dang near anything with Marco Manoukian. He's just one of the smartest people I've gotten a chance to get to know through having a statewide radio show going back to 2009. But the main reason we wanted to get him here in studio this morning is to talk about the lifeline of the High Line, the Milk River, the St. Mary Irrigation Project. In fact, Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal, she wrapped up the events that impacted 2024. And this was part of a conversation that took place during the Economic Outlook Seminar with Pat Barkey and the Bureau of Business and Economic Research. But on that top 10 list, of course, was the failure of the St. Mary siphon over the St. Mary River near Babb, Montana, in the summer of 2024, presenting significant challenges to highline irrigators and recreators, affecting groundwater levels and Milk River flows. And of course, Marco is the co-chair of the St. Mary's Rehabilitation Working Group. Marco, where is the project at right now? I see they've had some crews doing some work already out there, actually working to make the upgrades.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just for context for your listeners, I've been a part of the working group since 2003, when then Lieutenant Governor Ose recognized that there was a problem. He was the lieutenant governor. He recognized the state was contributing to a federal project, and he brought us all together to try to find a workable solution before the project suffered a catastrophic failure. We didn't meet our job, but since that point in time, you got to remember, if you looked across the United States and were looking for an 8-foot steel pipe, there was none. So we had to start from ground zero, and really the Joint Board of Control and their manager, Jen Patrick, really went to work with the Bureau of Reclamation, the Blackfeet Tribe, to ready the site. So you got to demolish all the pipe. That's 3,600 feet, two barrels. Some of the concrete buttresses, you got to get rid of all that material and then start putting pipe, make the pipe. So steel rolls would come from Texas to the West Coast, and they would spiral that into 40-foot sticks and haul them to Babb, Montana. And there's a group of welders from the state of Montana that are welding the inside and outside of the pipe, three passes each, and probably a little over half of the pipe is installed and covered.
Very interesting. Yeah, so because big picture, look, people like you have been sounding the alarm about something catastrophic like this happening for decades now, right? Yep. Even the folks, even some of the fine employees at the Bureau of Reclamation have been making the pitch and telling Washington, we've got to do something, we need to do something, and there's been a little bit here and a little bit there. And so it's really a failure across administrations and across elected officials that it ever got to this point to begin with. But now, hopefully, there is a consensus now that, look, we've got to do this, and we've got to do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, yeah. And just so you know, that there is an injury when you don't have irrigation water. And I don't know why anybody didn't put pencil to pen and kind of figure out what was going on. But as an irrigator, you know, I could look at my fields, and we were only left with half an irrigation the second go around in 2024, and I just estimated what my losses were and kind of put that across the project area. And so we lost $7.8 million just in crop losses alone. And the issue now is, can they
just for last season, not to mention what you might lose in the next season.
In this next season, if we get water in June, we'll be okay. Bureau is still saying August when we'll get water. That one's going to cost us closer to $40 million in crop losses and probably another $16 million in secondary losses. Just like I didn't buy as much net wrap as I usually would. Not going to buy as much fuel. Had a neighbor, a big operator, he stopped and said, do I buy fertilizer? Are we going to get an irrigation? And I don't know what to tell them.
And those millions in losses, again, that you just outlined, is for who again? For
just the irrigators.
Just the irrigators.
Yep.
And in which region in particular?
So if you would say from Havre to Saco, the Nelson Reservoir that's at Saco, it does have some water. They should have a first irrigation. But there's 100,000 acres above that will be basically idle if we don't get water before August.
Wow. So right now they're saying, okay, we should be able to have the water up and running by August, but you're hoping maybe they could get it done by June?
Yeah. The manager, Jim Patrick, thinks in the next 5 weeks how much of a push we can get to get the siphons. The bad thing is we're going to stick it in another siphon that's 120 years old. That's Halls Cooley. We have the pipe to replace it. We just don't have the time to do it until next year. So, you know, as your point earlier, there's been a lot of time for people to look at this and say, hey, a failure was imminent, and we're kind of living it out over several months.
Yeah. Well, that's why this is called the lifeline to the High Line. When you look at, you know, Highway 2, you look at that northern tier of Montana, and this is what delivers that water for those irrigators. It delivers drinking water, helps with recreation as well. I remember seeing photos when the Bureau of Reclamation folks joined us on the radio last summer, I think it was, and they shared photographs of the failure of the St. Mary siphon. It looked like a rusted out tailpipe on the back of an old pickup from the 80s or the 70s or something. I mean, that's what this pipe looked like.
Yeah, it was from the 1800s, actually. But anyways, wow. your point about the municipalities, we've met along the High Line on this project for a long time, 21 years. And last month was the first time we really had municipalities show up in force and say, hey, our water quality is not good. And so that's the other unsightly effect. Fresno Reservoir is got about 10,000 acre feet in it, and it's the dredges of the 10,000 acre feet. All that mineralization, there's probably some fish scales and everything else that's in it. And Haver, Chinook, Harlem, and Fort Belknap Agency all drink out of it, and they're going to suffer some water quality issues if we don't get dilution.
Interesting. Hold that thought back with Marco Manukian right after this.
It's February 17th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is My Way Day. This is not about the mega hit from the legendary crooner Frank Sinatra. The day encourages you to do whatever, however you want, just make sure it's legal. In 1801, Thomas Jefferson is elected the third president of the United States and marks the first peaceful transfer of power from one political party to another in the United States. At the Winter Olympics in Nagano, Japan in 1998, the U.S. women win the first Olympics gold medal for ice hockey, defeating Canada 3-1. Born on this day in 1991, singer, songwriter Ed Sheeran. Maybe now. The 2014 single Think Out Loud earning him 2 Grammy Awards for Song of the Year and Best Pop Solo Performance. Reality star Paris Hilton born on this day in 1981. I'm CJ Papa. That's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more about the water situation in the Fresno Reservoir in particular. And when we're talking about drinking water quality for several communities here in Montana. But first, I get so easily distracted. You know, Marco Manukian, it's such a cool name. So I had to ask you, I said, so what's your family's background? What's your, you know, nationality? And you were telling me it's Armenian.
Correct.
Any relation to the Kardashians?
Well, just financially. No, yeah. No. They're just long lost.
They're
cousins.
Funding the ranch. They're the hidden investors in the ranch, right? It's the Kardashians.
Exactly.
All, that was just a joke. There's one person in Malta that will believe that. I can't believe the Kardashians are out here funding Marco's ranch. It was just a joke. Some people
don't take it serious.
Some people get really literal, and before you know it, they're putting posters all over town.
It'll be on Facebook, right?
Frank's gonna be you know having the door kicked in at KMMR, and you know, my goodness.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the serious note, though. The water situation in Fresno, in particular.
You know, the fires in California got a lot more airtime than the failure at Babb did. But we had some commonalities with them. One, the fire situation in California was predictable. Lots of people, you can go on YouTube and see that. Our failure was predictable. We'd been saying for 21 years it could break. They sent their water out to the Delta, and the president commented, you know, that was a dumb idea. Why didn't you use your water? Due to the failure, we weren't able to transfer water out of Sherburne Reservoir to Fresno, and we sent 95,400 acre feet to Canada because we had no way to transfer it. So I think that's a dumb thing that happened. We should have recognized what's going on there. And every year, our canal system is so degraded, we can't divert all of the water that we share with Canada, which is 850 cubic feet per second. We only divert 600. So in addition to the big components of the siphons, getting those fixed, if we don't fix the canal, which is a $200 million bill, we will still dribble water into the Milk River, and most of that water, or some of that water, is going to go to Canada, and we've given them enough. We really need to focus on this project with a laser and start addressing some of these.
Now, needs. You said 200 million with an M, not 200 billion with a B, right?
Right, 200 million.
So, I mean, to me, it's like, okay, I'm looking at a list here that's already got probably at least a quarter of that. 7.9 million to teach Sri Lankan journalists how to avoid binary gendered language. $20 million for Iraqi Sesame Street, $2 million for sex changes in Guatemala. The USDA, they just cut, thanks to Trump, $230,000 for a Brazilian forest and gender consultant. And so $200 million for a lifeline of water that feeds the world and that provides clean drinking water, sounds like a literal drop in the bucket.
It should not be an issue. And to that point, I've been saying at our meetings, you know, I take whatever Botswana got in funding. When I took Representative Rosendale up there, I begged him, you know, just treat us as a third world country, which we are, and give us the money. But now that we've had the failure, we've suffered consequences. I really feel for there's going to be some guys that are going to not be able to get operating loans, I believe, if we don't have water till August. So the secondary impacts are going to be significant. Let's start working on the canal, because we can do some of that. If the water is going to be off, we might as well address that and make things right when we're ready to run water by August.
Heck, another case in point. Kennedy on the 5 on Friday was talking about, there was a Canadian company that promised they would deliver electric vehicle school buses to schools all across America.
3 minute stations.
I'm wondering how many of those might be in Montana. That contract, $160 million contract to provide EV school buses to schools that already have buses, and they never delivered the EV school buses. That $160 million right there could have fixed the canal, right?
Almost. Yeah, would have got a good thing. And really, as irrigators, we're saddled with 75% of the costs on these things, unless a disaster happens or some designation like this. So basically, we have $26 million, which is the state loan that we have. And thank goodness we do have that. It's going to cost us a little, but the money returns to us. But we got $26 million to cover $163 million in bills. And that's just an inequality we shouldn't be faced with. And hopefully, one reason why I'm here and took the chance, and thank you very much for the opportunity to visit with you, that the state has a budget surplus. They could do something. The federal government could look in the seat cushions and scrounge together some bucks and come forward with it. There is a bill, Fort Belknap Water Compact. We are a part of that bill. Or to me, just designate $300 million to go to the project and fix it, because that way Belknap would get their water, and so would Blackfeet. They're without water when that canal's not flowing either.
That's
so
right.
It would solve a lot of issues.
Because, again, big picture for folks who are maybe new to Montana or just need a refresher on, you know, this St. Mary's Irrigation Project in the Milk River, Babb, Montana, right on the edge of Glacier National Park, northwest Montana there. And then eventually the project kind of pushes into Canada for a little bit and then back down in the United States. And so But yeah, I mean, this is drinking water. This is irrigation water. Tell me, it's great to have you here in the studio today, because, you know, we could get you on over the phone anytime, but it's always, you know, easier and better when we're in the studio. Plus, we can take phone calls easier. So if people want to call in, if you've got a question or a comment, you want to jump in on the conversation here, we're talking with Marco Manoukian, who is the co-chair of the St. Mary's Rehabilitation Working Group. So it worked out great today because you're at the bull sale in Billings anyway, so you joined us in studio. But also, why now? Why is this an important conversation to have now? I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is same reason why we want to talk about wildfires right now, because if we wait until the fire season kicks off this summer, it's too late. That's why you talk about wildfires right now and prevention and policy right now. Same thing when it comes to water. If we wait till the water is already dried up longer than we think, we're too late.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the truth. The St. Mary River goes north into Canada, and we take water out of it and we dump it into the Milk River. The Milk River would be dry 6 out of 10 years without that added water. So that's a statistic that we've known all along since the project. That's why Cyrus Babb, for which Babb, Montana is named, he came from Massachusetts out here and figured out, well, Havre's not the location to get all the water. It's the Rockies. And it's an amazing feat what he did at the turn of the century with just horses and hand tools. They had no real mechanized equipment. They had one steam engine that dumped a scoop into a horse-drawn wagon. So you can imagine how much dirt you're going to put into a horse-drawn wagon. But they were able to recognize the water issue and what it meant to the High Line at that point. And I just think for whatever reason, we haven't had rose-colored glasses that it'll be okay, no worries. And now we're kind of in a pickle. But hopefully our congressional and state leaders, I think there's still time in the legislature for them to do something big. And I'm hopeful.
Well, heck, if Cyrus Babb could do all that with just a trailer, you could get a lot of this snow back to Phillips County before the week's over.
Yeah, I don't know if I pushed some snow. I started my tractor and did it. I didn't really need to do it, but I pushed some snow in the irrigation ditch by the house, and I thought, well, it's a partial irrigation anyway. So we'd take any snow we could.
Now, one thing that would help, of course, is the more snowpack, the better. And, at least in South Central, maybe parts of Southwest Montana, that snowpack's probably looking really good right now based on all the snow we're seeing right outside of our studios alone right now. But you were telling me Northwest Montana, there's still only about
70% of normal. And the Milk River is a little bit odd. It says it's 250% of normal, but we only, the average is 3.4. So if you get 7, you're 200 plus. And that's not even enough water to run water. We needed probably somewhere of a foot to 20 inches of snow, and we've gotten probably 6.
So if in the 1800s Cyrus Babb could do all this with horses and hand carts and things like that, that's why people are so amazed. That's why last summer when we were talking about this, I was just kind of like asking the question, why couldn't we do a short-term fix? And even if they didn't mind spending the money, I forget how much it was going to be per day to do a short-term fix, if that's what you want to call it. They may not even have the pipe to be able to build the short-term fix because of supply chain constraints, inflation that we've seen in the last few years, and the massive government spending on all these other programs creates a demand for more of those very resources that we would need to make this emergency fix.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's a publication. It was a Regional Bureau of Reclamation Water Outlook. And it figured that we needed, it was done in 2012, $120 million to fix St. Mary's to brand new. And we're going to be closer to $500 million if we fix the canal, the siphons, the diversion structure. Anyways, they are working on it. I don't want to throw water on their cold efforts. Up there, and I mean, it's cold. It's 20 below, and those guys are still welding and doing all the activities that we need to do to be successful. But I just think with the failure and the economic problems we've had, Congress and the state needs to do more to assure that the water quality and water system is functioning.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I personally think that these DOGE efforts, Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency, are so important because, A, we have $36 trillion in debt. There's some good things that we shouldn't be funding right now because we're so deeply in debt. But there's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse that they're exposing right now, and we need to expose that to free up funds to fund the important things like this because there are still things that we need to fund. And Marco, can you stick around for the second half of the show as well? Great. Marco Manoukian is going to stick around with us because, especially given his career as an extension agent in Northeast Montana, you've seen how the private sector agribusiness has stepped up and invested in new infrastructure. So why isn't the public sector stepping up and investing in new infrastructure when we see, $160 million lost to some Canadian company over EV school buses that we didn't need in the first place?
On Friday, thousands of USDA employees were let go in what the agency called a workforce optimization effort. Those let go are calling it a St. Valentine's Day massacre. But Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins defended the decision, saying the move is part of a broader effort to make USDA more efficient and responsive to farmers and ranchers. She also announced in her first address to USDA employees on Friday that they will review over 1,000 federal contracts and a return to in-office work for all employees will be implemented.
First and foremost, we are proud to invite the Department of Government Efficiency here into USDA. They're already here. They've been here for a few weeks, but we are welcoming the efforts because we know that that work will make us better here at USDA. It will make us stronger. It will make us faster, and it will make us more efficient. We will expect full access from all of our teams here at USDA to this effort.
The cuts primarily affect probationary employees in their first or second year of federal service. Agencies seeing the biggest reduction include the Natural Resources Conservation Service, along with the U.S. Forest Service. However, wildland firefighters were spared from the layoffs. This is a developing story that I'll continue to track. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund. This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Eventually, I'm going to find the $20 billion. It was like throwing gold bar. What did they say? It was like throwing gold bars off on the Titanic.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to find this clip here eventually. I know I sent something out via X, via Twitter last week. Lee Zeldin, the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Actually, Marco Mnuchin, you're tracking that story. So, What did they do with this? This was just more of this fraud, waste, and abuse where the Biden administration, on the tail end of the administration, they were just kicking money out the door left and right as much as possible, especially if it was for green energy projects or these other woke initiatives. They were trying to get all this money out the door and to their buddies as fast as possible before Trump got into office.
Yeah, up until noon on January 20th. They were throwing gold bars off the Titanic. And so the gentleman says, we stuck it in a bank, $20 billion. And he said, why did you do that? Well, nobody would go looking for it. And so it was a green energy bank. They funded green project and had green subcontractors. And that's how they were going to get the money out. But the EPA director found it, thank God, and clawed it back and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're there. $20 billion with a B. $200 million is like a sliver of that.
Yeah.
I just found it. Lee Zeldin, this was from February 12th. So, last Wednesday, I guess that would have been. The Biden EPA tossed $20 billion of, quote, gold bars off the Titanic. Big update. We found the gold bars, and they are now being recovered for you, the hardworking American taxpayer. And again, just a sliver of that money. It, to me, it doesn't get more green than a water project for farms.
Absolutely.
To green up the crops.
Yep, yep, yep. Especially if we're looking to idle 100,000 acres, there won't be much green going on with that. As we bumped along here, I think, you know, we've tried to do everything we could. We reached out to all our congressional delegation over the millennials. I remember meetings with Burns, Baucus, all those folks.
I remember talking about it when I was a college student working on Capitol Hill back in the day.
Yeah. So, and somewhere along the way, somebody said, you need an ability to pay study. How much money do irrigators and municipalities have to pay for a large construction project? And so we paid, I think it was $80,000 to the Bureau of Reclamation to speed up their ability to pay study. And it came back and it said, we have a negative $30.81 an acre to pay, meaning we have no additional money to pay for a large construction project. So your point about the general public, that's why we need the general public. There's other benefits that the public gets out of this. Wildlife. When I go feed my cows in the morning, you got to see the pheasants and deer run off the feed ground. It's cold. Their only source of uncovered food is what I dribble out for my cows. So there's lots of fishing that goes on. None of that happens if the Milk River is dry and those reservoirs, Sherburn, Fresno, and Nelson, are not full of water.
I was going to say, I wonder if the guys in Glasgow that do the catfishing tournament, well, you can Probably kiss that goodbye.
Well, right? A lot of that's done at Fort Peck. So,
oh, is it further down?
Yeah, it is further down. But,
okay.
But there's a January thaw fishing derby at Nelson Reservoir, and the only reason it gets water is because we take it from St. Mary to put in there.
Yeah, I mean, about the only upside I can see, maybe fewer mosquitoes, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, of course, no mosquitoes out there today while you're out there checking on your cows.
No, right? not an issue at the current rate, but we need another infusion of money. We're going to have money to fix the diversion structure, the siphons. We'll get that money, as you said. You asked me if it was frozen money with this review, and some of it is, but we were deep enough into the construction, about $23 million. We had some state dollars that we can put towards it in the short term to cover the federal components. And so I don't want to say we haven't been successful at the federal level, but, you know, we've bumped along for 21 years. And without a rehabilitated canal, we really can't maximize our water take. And since we gave Canada 95,400 acre feet and give them 200 CFS a year because we can't divert it, we need to fix the canal.
So I wonder, what's the ask of the feds, and is there and should there be an ask of the state with the legislative session underway right now? I know the state may say, look, this is a Fed issue. The Fed should be paying for this. So if we've got listeners out there who want to say, hey, let's get this done, let's cut all this woke crap, and let's fund things like the Lifeline of the High Line, here's what the ask is of the feds, and is there and should there be an ask of the state as well?
So I had been asking of the state because they did have a budget surplus, but some were saying that I was offending them for asking. But I contend the people that are taking it in the shorts on this deal are Montanans. We're not illegal aliens. We're not Canadians. They're benefiting from our loss. So
we're not booing the national anthem.
Yeah, you know, like, anything like that.
We stand for it. Yeah.
So they have a budget surplus, they should probably provide some additional money. Representative Gianforte did come to our St. Mary's meetings twice and said this is the most important infrastructure and project in the state of Montana. I just wish he would have remembered that when he became governor. I think they could do more. But certainly the feds, we've asked for money. I can remember sending Representative Daines a letter in 2014 asking for some assistance, and until the infrastructure bill and then a couple of these disaster issues, that's when the money's broke loose, and it should have been more.
$200 million, what was the check that they just tried to ram through to New York City before Trump clawed it back? $68 million for illegal aliens and fancy hotels.
And hotels, yeah.
Again, there's $68 million, $160 million from the EV school buses that never showed up. By golly, we've more than paid for it,
yeah,
right there.
You wouldn't have to blink and you could find it in the melee of wasteful spending. But
I mean, if food's important to people, I mean, I went to Costco in Billings yesterday. My wife and I did after church.
No eggs.
And so, again, if food is important to people, well, then the infrastructure's got to be important there, too. Let's sneak in a caller, 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app as well. Jim in Kalispell, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I do. We clawed all this money back, and I got a couple texts from my son, who's really on the MAGA trail, and I can't believe Congress appropriated this money for these things that he sent me. If Congress appropriates it, it gets spent, correct?
Well, good question. Well, first, let me just do one follow-up for you, Jim. So, Jim, I know you were a big supporter of Biden over Trump. Were you happy with some of the stuff that he was funding?
Well, not the stuff I'm looking at that my son Jimmy sent me, I can't believe that Congress appropriated money for stuff like $2 million for changes and LGBTQ activism in Guatemala.
Yeah, that's one of the ones on the list.
I can't believe that Republicans.
Yeah, I get where you're going with this. I get where he's going with this, because I heard the same complaint from fellow conservatives saying, well, why the hell is the Congress funding this? Stephen Miller, who has been with President Trump since day one, he actually tackled this very topic. So partly what Jim is saying here is hey, guys, President Trump can't just cancel this funding because Congress appropriated this money. So the president can't just do away with this. That's not what Congress did, and Stephen Miller laid this out. Republicans in Congress did not say, did not. Now, you could argue, well, okay, what happened is you've got the Democrat-controlled Senate and Chuck Schumer and John Tester. They were funding all this woke stuff, and they were going to do everything to fund the woke stuff no matter what, and the House Republicans just couldn't get their act together to stand up and fight against it, even if it meant a shutdown, regardless of what you want to say there. But Stephen Miller made the point. He said, no, these specific projects were not funded. They were not appropriated by Congress. This now, the budget was funded for USAID or USDA, but this is discretionary funds that the Biden administration chose to fund. So Donald J. Trump has every right within his power as president to claw back the discretionary funding. But I get where Jim was trying to go with this is, hey, if Congress appropriated this, they can't just claw this stuff back, whether we like it or not. But that's where Stephen Miller says Congress did not support the sex changes to Guatemala and the other laundry list of woke stuff.
Yeah, and maybe we better look at the discretionary part of things. There are not many discretionary dollars in the federal budget, and we better be more in tune to where they're going and what they're being used for as a body. I think that's one thing. And I'll just say, water is life. You can't get a cup of coffee if you don't have water, and you can't flush.
Well, that's fighting words right there. You tell me I can't have my coffee. I've already refilled three times since you got here.
And you can't get rid of your coffee. You can't flush the toilet without a cup of
coffee. Well, I can dig a hole.
You probably get arrested here in Billings if you make the snow yellow. So
that's right.
Be careful. So, you know, I said early summer on another radio program, if we don't get this thing fixed, you won't be able to get a cup of coffee or flush the toilet in places like Havre, Chinook. And I really feel for their situation because they have no other water supply. Some of my words
can't get a well in or whatever.
I'm going to ask the state, are you going to drill a well for their municipal park? They need dilution, something horrible, because they're getting the dregs of Fresno Reservoir, and that just shouldn't be this.
Is the National Guard going to spend all their annual trainings delivering a bottle of water to the High Line? I mean, what?
Milk River, Canada, when the thing went dry, they hauled water.
Okay. All right. Hold your coffee cups for a second. Back after this.
Montana. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Great to have Marco Manoukian in the house out of Phillips County. He's the co-chair of the St. Mary's Rehabilitation Working Group. 29 years as an MSU Extension agent. He's also a rancher and the secretary treasurer of the Phillips County Livestock Association, an incredible group of folks really making waves on the national level. You see a lot of your members of that Phillips County Livestock Association, Vicki Olson, Leslie Robinson, now the chair of Fish and Game, and the president of Montana Stockgrowers.
Yep.
And Vicki has just been a rock star. Public Lands Council, stock growers, so much more. So it's just cool to see the leadership coming out of Phillips County. Not to rub it in to our friends in Phillips County here, but the National Weather Service office in Billings, this was 4 hours ago, and the snow is still falling, 6.2 inches of snow so far at the West End office. 2.2 inches was measured just since midnight. So I had to shovel some of that at O-Dark 30 because I couldn't use my snowblower yet or I'd tick off all the neighbors, right?
Town living.
But the 6 a.m. observed wind chills, and this is from the Billings office, so they only go as far north as Jordan. So I'll bet you the Glasgow office has even crazier numbers. But the observed wind chills, 41 below zero in Glendive. Baker was 37 below. Jordan was 35 below. But then Old Faithful, it's like there's that inversion in Yellowstone National Park again. They were 16 above in Old Faithful. But that'll oftentimes happen where Yellowstone will have like this inversion effect and the rest of the state could be 20, 30, 40 below and they're 15, 20 above. And even Bozeman, somebody today was telling me they were above zero pretty comfortably. So that'll happen. That will happen. What are you hearing from your friends back in the Malta area?
My wife sent me a minus 27 with a chili emoji. And I said, I looked at our weather station And the wind chill's in that minus 40 category. So my son had to stay home and make sure the waters didn't freeze and the cattle got fed and the sheep get fed. So anyways, I came down for the bull sale.
You know, you would think that this really, really cold Arctic air that comes in from Canada would make the Canadians tougher. But did you see the Canadians get their butts kicked on the ice in Montreal on Saturday?
The melee that turned into an ice hockey game eventually.
I was asking the question earlier, what the Kachuk happened there? Well, the two Kachuk boys threw their gloves off in the first few seconds, started beating up the Canadian players. And then in Montreal, the U.S. beats Canada 3-1.
Yeah, go USA.
But apparently their dad, also a Kachuk, threw the gloves off back in 1996. So it's a family tradition.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll bet you our friends in Alberta and Saskatchewan wouldn't boo the anthem like the eastern folks up there in Canada.
Sure, yeah. No. We probably get along with the western part of the country better than we do the eastern part, for sure. They speak French over there, too, so.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. Enough said there, right? Well, let's see. We only got a couple, 2-3 minutes or so left here, Marco Manoukian. What else do you want to tell our listeners all across Montana that we haven't gotten to yet, or just something you want to reinforce?
Well, I do want to give credit where credit is due. And the Bureau of Reclamation and the Joint Board of Control, Blackfeet Tribe, have really worked to streamline and get that thing up and running. The problem is it should have been done earlier, and the risk is that it doesn't happen till August, and that's unfortunate for the people that rely on that as a business. I got a neighbor, he feeds bulls, probably feeds 1,000 bulls for the producers around there, and you know, if he doesn't have a feed source, he ain't going to put much into his feedlot. So it's significant, and I'm sure he's like everybody else. What do we do? We don't know confirmation yet what the situation is going to be with our water situation. And as I said, I'm feeling for the municipalities because they have no other water source unless we augment it somehow.
Yeah, I tell you, I have trouble feeding one high school football player, let alone 1,000 bulls. My goodness. Joe Dooling in Helena, I know he's been passionate about this issue as well. And he says St. Mary's did everything right, built a working group, and tried for 24 years to try and get it fixed. Even powerful senators like Burns and Baucus could not get it done. Yet millions go to countries that hate us. This is why Doge and Trump are winning.
Yeah.
Well said there by Joe Dooling.
And, you know, as a public system, because we were a public entity, we were sponsored by the state and still sponsored by the state. Lieutenant Governor Juris sits on as the state co-chair. That's the other half of me. Anyways, I understood that we were going to have to do some public process. I just didn't understand that we were going to eat the whole cow along the way to get something done and really only get knee-jerk reaction when we have a failure. And I just wish Congress in general was more cognitive of our few discretionary dollars and invest in things that are productive and not in things that are consumptive.
And stop sending our money to countries and people that hate us.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
When our own people may not have clean drinking water. Put your former extension agent hat on for the final minute. What's the big picture in ag country right now with 1 minute to go?
Well, you know, I've turned into a nerd on meteorology. So Eric Snodgrass is a meteorologist, and he does a webinar every morning. So I get it's like a class for 30 minutes. And he's been talking about this lack of snow east of us, north and east of us here.
All the way to Wisconsin.
Yep, all the way to Wisconsin. There's about 7 million head of cattle that live in that area, just as a wonky figure. They've been identifying that that was low soil moisture going into the winter, needed an above moisture year over the winter to change their outlook. And so as early as December, he was saying, you know, that could be a drought situation. And that's a big part of our food bank footprint.
So if you think we got a low cattle inventory now, just wait till 7 million head later, potentially.
Even if it's half of that, that's a huge, you know, when we had our drought in 2017, the climate office here at the state figured we had $2.8 billion in loss between the Dakotas and Montana, and we are going to lose more than $6 to $10 billion.